Jason, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Really excited to have you on here today. We are going to be talking about crowdfunding, which doesn't sound like a typical marketing conversation, but we will find out that it is. So welcome. Thank you.
I've been looking forward to this. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor.
Of course, of course. Well, let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. I've got my standard questions. They're very easy. What was your first marketing role, or whether it had marketing in the title or not, what you would have thought was your first marketing role?
Wow. We're going far back here.
We are. We are.
2008 action sports consultant. I grew up here in Southern California, snowboarding, skating, surfing, was hired by a marketing agency to work on action sports brands, action sports accounts. And I loved it. And frankly, the strategies I put together, not to toot my own horn from 2008, but they were very good and they brought growth and I loved every bit of it. Only so much business, only so many campaigns to work on there. So I was then transformed to a Gen Y specialist. That's what millennials were called back then, Gen Y. Oh. And you know, targeting youth markets.
Nice. So those were your humbled beginnings. Where are you at now? What are you currently doing?
Well, it's quite a jump from there, worked with other agencies, was part of a social gaming startup, got into the world of ad tech, running an ad network that merged with that social gaming company, and then started my own agency, a growth marketing firm called DNA here in Marina Del Rey, found our niche, our specialization, which is very important for marketing agency, in investor acquisition, investment crowdfunding, as you said. I was first brought to these initiatives to leverage advertising data partnerships that I have to reach high net worth, high household income audiences, and effectively raise capital through marketing, through advertising, which was mind-blowing for me because I saw so many small businesses struggle with capital formation. A couple years later, Reg CF, Regulation Crowdfunding, as well as Regulation A Plus went into effect where you could also raise from retail investors, so any adult essentially, have to file through the SEC, likely work with the broker-dealer or FINRA-regulated portal. But on Reg CF, you could raise up to $5 million. Regulation A Plus, you could raise up to $75 million. We've worked on over 500 of these deals to date with our marketing campaigns. And those initiatives have collectively produced nine figures of capital. So that's what I'm doing today.
Part of the reason that I really wanted to talk to you is because, one, like I said at the beginning, crowdfunding is not anything that people like equate with marketing or have that connection. So I'm really excited to just kind of unpack how it relates back to or how you leverage marketing to actually like make things happen. But before we do, you've told me about what it is that you do now. I want to know of what you do now. What is it that you love about what you do? But with the good comes the bad. So I'm going to ask you what, if anything, if I could remove any one thing, what would that be? So let's start with the good. What do you love about what you currently do?
Businesses fail when they're undercapitalized to be bringing these dollars to these organizations. I watch their teams grow. I watch their offices grow, their product evolve, their market share increase. It's genuinely fulfilling to be part of this area of business for a company. It comes along with the bad side where we're on the front lines of performance. So if Raise isn't producing the response it's looking for from investors, there can be some difficult discussions. We have, as marketers, of course, want to optimize and change up the channels, the audiences, the creative, the funnel. You know, some of those conversations can be a bit of a dread. I wish I could just work harder. I wish I could just, you know, do 1,000 push-ups and, you know, now the campaign's working. But probably good for my health as well, but that's unfortunately not... not how working.
I also think that most marketers would want that too. If I could do 100 pushups, man, would I be so ripped and the campaign would be incredibly successful. But exactly. I also imagine because of like that good and the bad, that kind of almost sounds very yin yang of your business that you don't say yes to everybody. I'm assuming you've got some criteria before you're like, yeah, we'll take this on because I can see it.
It's a balance. There are agencies that only take on a few campaigns and have a very strict application and approval process. We have many referral partners, over 200 in the list, transparently. And if the right recommendation comes through, if they are already in the filing process with the SEC, set up with a portal, which is essentially a marketplace where many of these deals are listed. Some of them give tools so that the issuer can list the deal on their own site, the company issuing the investment opportunity. If they have a marketing budget, which actually checks a lot of boxes in the background, not because they have money, but because they have different things organized and in order. They understand how this works and the planning. I want to do a good job of explaining what we can do, what we can't promise. Again, the push-ups don't equate to investments. But there's no magic behind the curtain of this. This is exactly how we're going to run it. I'm actually pretty flexible about who we take on. And I do that because if I was just picking deals that I thought could raise the full amount, I would have been wrong in the past. There were companies that surprised me. There were companies that had celebrities and athletes attached that underperformed and was told, you know, different audiences would do different things. And we had an uphill battle to get them to decent levels of you know, their goal. Also, the whole nature of regulation crowdfunding is to democratize access to capital for founders, for CEOs, as well as for investors to access deal flow and be able to invest in a company that could become a unicorn. Their valuation could go from 10 million, 40 million to, you know, a billion, multiple billions. I've worked with companies that have hit those marks. Those are not, you know, just my imagination. So I don't necessarily want to be the group limiting who could work with us. If they're prepared, if they're ready, if they're legal, I want to explain what we can do with getting investors to their page and putting out messaging that is likely to convert them at higher levels, but that we cannot guarantee.
I love that. Well, let's dive into it. As I said, what we're talking about is crowdfunding, how it's actually a marketing problem, not just a finance problem.
Yes.
Before we dive too deep into it, because I already wanted to ask you like 12 different questions just based on everything that you've said, you threw out a lot of acronyms. Now, remember, okay, I'm a marketer, not a finance person. So let's start easy peasy with crowdfunding. What do we mean and what qualifies as crowdfunding, just for the listeners?
Sure. And I would say crowdfunding is a marketing exercise. These capital raises using digital channels, it's a marketing play. The lawyers and the accountants in the space will tell you the same thing. It basically means a crowd, a high volume of typically smaller investments to produce the full capital goal. So as an example, the average raise on a Reg CF, a regulation crowdfund campaign last year was $1,716. So you need 1,000 investments to raise approximately $1.7 million. Going after larger investors, that could be one investment. It could be 17 investments of about $100K. But that crowd carries a lot of additional weight in a good way. You know, you put out a post, there's 1,000 shareholders that are, in many cases, alongside you that can, you know, repost. 1,000 people, some of them probably have different strategic partnerships they want to speak with you about, different publishers and groups that they have access to. I've seen merger and acquisition activity come out of it, franchise, all different types of great things. So I would definitely tell you there's strength in the crowd. And if the markets are a little funny that week, that month, when you're going out there, it's a lot tougher to get $1.7 million from one person or even $100K. A lot easier to get $1,000, $1,700, $2,500. You may see someone put in those amounts just to be along for the ride, just to support, just to, you know, reinforce what you're doing. And say they're a shareholder in X industry, fill in the blank there. So that's the distinction.
Okay. And you said they're an investor, meaning they get equity. At what point?
Yeah. There's different ways to structure it. So there's equity, crowdfunding, equity deals, could be common stock, preferred stock. it should be referred to as regulated investment crowdfunding because these offerings can be built on debt. So there's a, you know, a guaranteed percentage that's paid back. It could be a convertible note, a safe, it could be revenue share, a lot of different ways to structure it. But it's issued upon completion of the transaction. So different portals have it set up different ways, different broker dealers, but basically by the end of the round, they're getting that equity. What that, when that equity could be liquidated, that varies. Some companies are holding off to be sold. Others are going to go public. Many groups will talk about their exit strategy. There's, you know, compliance. You had to speak about it the right way and be careful about forward-looking statements, of course. Talk to legal. We're on the marketing side. There are a number of these companies that have gone public, sold, and there's been, you know, strong upside for the investors that got involved early.
Perfect. Okay, so those are all the finance questions I'm going to ask you. So I'm going to put my calculator away and I'm going to put on my marketing hat. Tell me why crowdfunding is a marketing exercise over the financial and knowing all of that.
Yeah, some issuers think once they're complete with the administrative process of filing the appropriate paperwork, working with, you know, accountants and lawyers and broker dealers to get it live, they're on the internet. There's billions of people a day online. They're going to be able to raise the capital. They have a beautiful baby that is their company. Everyone's going to want to see it. Everyone's going to want to invest and be part of it. Not the case. So you build an offering page. Many of them have a pitch video in there. The offering page can commonly look like a pitch deck, but vertical. So you're scrolling through and you're seeing more information about the problem, the solution, the team, the industry, the use of proceeds, again, speaking compliantly, the market and the growth plan, all of that right there, all the information available to all of the investors. It's a big part of it. It's not some investors have some secrets and details. No, all the information is available to all the investors. But then you have to get traffic to that page. In most cases, at least for a Reg CF campaign, the transaction occurs on that page. So they can press the Invest Now button, put in their personal information, their financial information, complete their investment, buy X amount of shares, or, you know, however it's structured. You have to figure out how you're going to get the traffic there. So have to bring my marketing calculator out. But if I'm looking at a 1%, 2% conversion rate, I reference a study where average conversion rate is 2.35% industry, you know, internet wide. If you're at a 1%, 2% on one of these retail investments, you're in a good place. But you have to figure out, hey, how am I going to get, you know, 50,000, 100,000 visits to that offering page and from the right investors to be able to get 1,000 investments? And, you know, maybe that produces that $1.7 million. Maybe it's a million, maybe it's 2 million, maybe, you know, have outstanding levels of your average investment and it's, you know, higher or lower. But how you're getting the people there, how you're converting them, because it's probably going to be 7 touch points or more before they feel comfortable enough to put in this information and, you know, transact with you. What you're doing on the content side to get a higher conversion rate. And these are questions that not all issuers are asking themselves. These are aspects that lawyers and accountants, I know I keep referencing them, they're important pieces of the puzzle that they're not able to speak to the same way I'm not able to speak to, you know, what they do.
Yeah.
But it is purely a marketing campaign that makes these campaigns successful. And then once that happens, we'll see issuers come back for more rounds and at higher valuations and really use this as an advantage, really use this as a growth vehicle and towards their competition and market.
So when you are evaluating, a new brand that's come to you, that's like, all right, you know, I want to get on this. You mentioned industry average of like 2.4 conversion rate percent. Is that just kind of what you use in general as a baseline to get started? Or have you seen conversion points higher and lower within all the businesses that you've just kind of worked your system through?
It definitely ranges. You can use, I would say, 1% to 2% in your projections. I would probably project conservatively, but those are merely numbers on a spreadsheet. until the data is showing you what's actually occurring. So you use it for planning. We have assumptions going in for which audiences, which creatives will produce best, and the results that are going to accompany those. But we'll need the actuals once the campaign's up and running and at different points throughout to be able to shift those projections over time. Had a campaign that did very well, maxed out their round. They had raised prior, it was 3.765, and they'd raised 1.235 prior. That 1.235 is about $1.25 million. You can raise that without audited financials. Many groups go for that goal first and then raise the next amount. And they saw 0.7% conversion rate. It could still be very effective if you're getting the traffic there at the right price. And of course, it's converting. I've seen campaigns produce lower than that. I've seen campaigns produce much higher, over 3%. So it's not to say you're stuck to one level as much as these are targets. These are goals you want to hit.
No, I like that. And I think that's really great advice too, to know that like there are people that fall out of that spectrum. I think oftentimes we're always looking for what's the baseline, what's good, what's good outside of like money in the bank, right? Because that's ultimately what it is that you're trying to, what you're trying to get to. And your business is so much one that is all about traffic to the page. How do you find where to get that right traffic to the page? I imagine everything is a little bit different for anybody that comes in, but just kind of what's your process and sort of, you know, it's a little peek behind the curtains of like, how do I get the right in front of the right people? Because I think as a marketer, I'm always trying to answer that, right? Because yes, I'm not trying to raise money, but I am trying to get those conversions. So I think like that's really where we think alike. But how are you finding the right crowds that are especially the right crowds that are going to invest in something? Because I feel like that's a heavier investment.
Sure. I want to jump forward to channels and give you the exact answer, but I actually need to take it back a step where it really all begins with strategy. There's a model I've built called the 8-point plan, a lot of approaches towards strategy. When we're working on it, I do an industry overview. I want to get a good understanding of two or three different verticals that the brand touches. One of them, investment crowdfunding and close similarities to them. I then want to do a competitor marketing audit, which is what I want to focus on here. Success leaves clues. You don't have to just guess, you know, where your audience is and what channels are going to work best. If you are looking at the top investment crowdfund campaigns, or, you know, for listeners, viewers who are running an e-commerce campaign, I think this sounds interesting, but could also take from it for their marketing campaigns. From the high level view, it's the same thing. Targeting audiences, bringing them down marketing funnels, measuring the conversion. This could even be looked at as e-commerce, but for stock in many cases. But there's more similarities than there are differences. And I want to know what ads competitors are running. I want to know what they're putting out on their content channels, what conferences they're speaking at, what publishers are talking about them. I want to know exactly how they're obtaining market shares, especially because my campaign is about to run alongside theirs. So the same audiences are likely going to see both of our creatives, both of our funnels, and I need them to go with mine. We work with the client, it becomes, you know, I try to take that ownership. We then look at target audiences, marketing channels, and creative, which I think that's what you're speaking to here of who you're targeting, where you're reaching them, and what are you saying to them. Again, success leaves clues. There's a lot that you could take from there. There are many financial publishers out there. You can buy email newsletter placements, marketing placements from them. Some of them charge investors to receive the content, and they don't run advertising programs for issuers. They handpick the issuers that they want to recommend to their audience. I would tell you a fundamental channel for these types of campaigns is Meta, Facebook and Instagram advertising. But what you're running on those ads can vary drastically, and creative is a very important part of performance for Meta ads in this day and age. So you want to be able to pull from that. Meta also allows for custom audience uploads. So you could put your customer email list on there, partner, client, you know, what have you, and you can run ads specifically to those people. You could place a pixel and do retargeting. I've built a database of over 1.8 million historical investment crowdfunding investors. Some of those individuals have over 100 deals in their portfolio, 100 investments they've participated on. If I'm reaching those prospects with ads, I'm anticipating a much higher conversion rate. There's less of an educational process. They've done this before. They're probably seeking different investments. I would tell you that you can target by equity crowdfunding as a detailed targeting filter on Meta. Your audience could do that today. I would also tell your audience they can have a pixel on all of their web pages that they own today. They could be collecting, you know, user data from that and building lookalike audiences. They should always be audience building and always looking to increase their email list. And for any campaign they want to run, they can upload their email list to run ads directly to them. But you want to run 4 to 10 different audiences. Again, you have assumptions going in. You need the data to show you what's working. You want to be able to compare and contrast performance. So that could change over time. But typically people who have an enthusiasm for your vertical, an enthusiasm for investment crowdfunding, they're active retail investors, active accredited investors, are going to show you the strongest response, strongest level of return.
So basically follow the breadcrumbs of success because there are breadcrumbs to follow when it comes to identifying your audience. And then one of the things that I really like that you said was how many different audiences you're picking at. I think, I think that oftentimes we get so myopic in our thinking of like, no, this is the person that I want to go after. But you really need to be able to, I would imagine, kind of test out, especially, you know, in the business that you're at, which leads me to my next question of testing out, where you sort of touched on it a little bit in regards to the creative and the messaging. So if I've got multiple, audiences, I'd love to hear your advice on, do we test messages with multiple or do we go with one message and test the audience? Do you know what I mean? It's a very like chicken and the egg. What are your thoughts on that?
I like to begin with 4 to 10 different audiences and 4 to 8 different creatives to start, and then launch an additional 4 to 8 creatives every 1 to 2 weeks thereafter. Why? Interesting. It's all about the retargeting and, you know, later touch points. And I don't want there to be fatigue, particularly if there's high frequency, meaning a lot of follow-ups, a lot of retargeting messaging. I want it to feel like an overwhelming amount of updates and announcements and excitement, not I keep seeing this ad again and again and again. So the amount of creative is important. I would say you could customize the creative for each audience. But if you're running, you know, standard set of creative and then looking to see how the audiences are responding, that's probably better than just being limited on the audiences and testing a lot of creatives. You want the data to show you what's working. And again, it is ideal to test both, meaning have enough audiences, have enough creatives, and have the creatives customized for each of those audiences so it feels like it's delivered to them in a more personalized fashion.
Okay. And so when I'm running a campaign typically, and I'm trying to get a lead, right? Not an investor. I'm trying to get a lead and I'm working them down the funnel. And maybe you're going to tell me it's exactly the same, Katya. Don't try to overcomplicate it. But the way when you're talking about that, I'm thinking, okay, well, when I'm executing my campaign, I know there are different levers that I can pull, right? From top of the funnel to middle of the funnel. Top of the funnel, it's very like, here's a white paper, here's, you know, a case study, maybe middle of the funnel. Like I'm serving them different content so that I can nurture them and then retarget them as well too. In the crowdfunding space, are you giving them a value asset so that you can continue to like either email them, or are you like more focused on just the pixel and then retargeting and then giving them different information through those ads?
Great question. You know, as mentioned, want to be able to optimize by channel and then within the channel by audience, creative, and funnel. Funnel, yes, want to have different variants there. In some cases, Katya, the traffic directly to the offering page, you know, straightest distance between, you know, two points, converts the best. And we'll still have prospecting, we'll still have retargeting set up, but that's what's driving for us. That's what we're gonna do more of. In other cases, it is a webinar sign up. So an offering page, traffic to a landing page with the webinar sign up, live event, not a VSL or recorded webinar as much as, hey, you're going to be able to ask questions to the founder. It's a pitch presentation. Huge. It's a town hall. They have a guest sitting next to them. It's an industry late leader. Maybe they're inviting people to the webinar too. Some of these can be done in person and with a digital broadcast extension. I found that to be very productive. I've worked on webinars where over $1 million is invested within a 24-hour window. I've worked on other webinars where it's 300K during the webinar. Another one was over 500K during the webinar. There's a company called MagFast that's very good at this, and a client of ours. I've been able to measure all the way through on many of these. We have run traffic to sign up to get an investor pitch presentation. You know, really a lot of that's on the offering page. So it's usually not my first recommendation, but it's another approach towards exactly what you're saying of mid-funnel conversion, maybe upper funnel conversion, get their email address, maybe phone number, get permission to email, maybe SMS, and have the follow-ups occurring. But at the end of the day, want to look at the data, the analytics, find pockets of performance, and do more of what's working.
Do you find that in this kind of campaign page that you're creating, it's a very standard format across companies, or are there large variations?
I would say there's best practices, so I would lean more towards the standard format, but that's just a format. You know, inside is what really stands out to investors.
Absolutely.
I would tell you that it follows landing page, conversion rate optimization, web design best practices. But for direct response type campaigns where you want to have a heavy amount of social proof and third-party validation layered in there, you know, as featured by what our investors are saying, what our customers are saying. Here's, you know, accomplishments from our team and background. These are conferences we just spoke at. These are podcasts we were just on. Big updates. There's update section. Look at all these big announcements. Look at all these things we're doing. It's really social dynamics at play on these campaigns.
Yeah.
You need to paint the picture that you have a line around the block versus come off as, you know, an empty restaurant and that sensation that comes along with it. The top 10% of issuers really get the most investments. They really get the majority of the investors. The bottom 50% pretty stagnant. So the more that you could put in that page to convey that excitement, that momentum, that traction, that growth, the better. That's definitely a similarity. That's definitely a standard for each of the campaigns. What they're able to show, what you're able to manufacture, it's going to vary, you know, campaign to campaign. But I would definitely point to that and anything you could do for immediacy. So there's different perks. Sometimes alongside the investment, you get tickets to the premiere of a film or, bonus shares, early bird pricing, and you can have those expire at different times. So there's immediacy to invest in that first week, that first month, that first 2 months, month four, month six, share price increases. There's differences of opinion on how you could speak to that compliantly, but it's a big driver for many of our top campaigns. And again, I think you'll see a lot of consistencies from the top Regulation A plus issuers. Those are the ones that can raise up to 75 million. Some of them have tens of millions raised. We're working on one right now that's leading the market, over 50 million raised. So you'll see, hey, they both have tickers for the time. They both are featured by these financial publishers. They both have their stock symbol already secured and suggesting they may go public. They both have pictures in Times Square and with advertisements behind them there. There's a lot of consistencies.
Those are those breadcrumbs, right? Those are those breadcrumbs that you talked about. Now, you did mention earlier, you do have an 8-point plan. I didn't want to gloss over that. What I do want to focus on versus you've already mentioned some of those points in the 8-point plan, but I'm also interested in hearing your take on what are maybe like the one or two points in that strategy or of your plan that you find that there are some founders that just kind of miss. So if I'm not signed up with you, what do you see in your plan that people typically miss?
Well, I mentioned the first 4 points of industry overview, competitor marketing audit, audiences, channels. I got into the fifth of creative, where you're building the content calendar, initial ads. After that would be partnerships, projections, and activation. I would say the projections and the competitor audit are the two that I'd want to point out. I could talk about partnerships until I'm blue in the face. That's how I've seen things grow the quickest. And I think those are also missed, but these can't be missed. Where the competitor marketing audit, like you said, those breadcrumbs, you could see exactly what's running on these ad channels.
Yeah.
And the exact moving mechanisms that are producing the success for these campaigns. And then the projections come along with a timeline. So I like to break projections down into an algorithm. Advertising. As an example, 3 points, impressions, clicks, conversions. There's associated metrics for each, but those are the main three. How many times an ad, this could be done for a piece of content organically as well, has been seen, how much traffic it's driving to an offering page, landing page, what have you, and how many conversions are coming out of that. By the way, smart media buying approaches each one of those touch points where, you know, many clients, especially early stage, just want to focus on the return on ad spend. First of all, I could spend a very light amount on ads. I could have it all directed towards retargeting and show outrageous numbers for return on ad spend. The transactional value, the marketing efficiency ratio while hitting those goals is probably more important. Marketing efficiency ratio of how much is spent and how much is raised, how much is produced. But if I can cut my bid down on the CPM, the cost per thousand impressions, Roman numeral yeah. M, if I could cut it in half, I could probably double my return on ad spend. Difficult to do, but there's different approaches towards it. If I can double my click-through rate, again, produces a much stronger return on ad spend. Many founders, many clients don't want to talk about this stuff. Like, I don't care about the clicks. I don't care about your Roman numerals or your impressions. Like, I don't care. I'm just focused on return on ad spend. It's like, okay, you and
of course they are. Of course they are. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. These are the building blocks. This is how you get to a good return on ad spend. And this is why we run a traffic campaign to build a retargeting pool. And then the retargeting is where we see the conversions. But it all comes together once the campaign's live. But it all comes together in the projections. And they need to improve and over time, and they need to show what you're anticipating for each month all the way through. I've worked with too many companies. I have consulted, coached, you know, sat down with founders at events and given them tips that think, you know, hey, if it's not working by day three, if it's not working by week three, if it's not working by month one, if it's not working by month two, it's a loss. I should stop everything. And it's simply the wrong approach. You need to be able to manage to a point of effectiveness. Once you crack the code with digital, you can really scale it up and get to whole new levels. And the top issuers in the space do this aggressively, but you need to have the right perspective towards it. And the projections allow for that.
That was actually going to be my final question before my final question was the timeline of this, you know, because even in this conversation, you've talked about, you know, being able to see, you know, large investments with a webinar, but you've also talked about, like, you know, this same mentality that I feel like is very consistent. If it's not going to work in 3 days, then I'll cut it, right? A week, a month, 3 months. So how do you kind of bridge that conversation? Or maybe it's a non-conversation in the niche that you're in because they're in there to invest until it works. But I'm really curious how you approach the time conversation.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the marketing expenses are always part of the discussion. So you have groups that are looking to raise capital. They don't want to be spending on marketing. Some of them don't even think that it's needed. I will tell you the most successful issuers have the most proactive founders, and those founders look at the data and really ramp into it when it's producing for them. 3 weeks to 3 months is a broad time range of, hey, we want to be seeing conversions. We want to be seeing investments.
Yeah.
We want to be able to see tangible results coming through that we could scale up. It is important that we're optimizing the channels, the audiences, the creatives, the funnels, all the things we've gone through, and not just hoping it gets better over time. Many campaigns are live from 3 months to 12 months. Some you know, think it's going to be an easier endeavor than it is. They hear, you know, Reg CFP could raise up to 5 million. Do I need 2 months or three to raise the 5 million? It's like, well, you know, it's a small percentage of issuers that actually do. What you want to be able to see is results that you can intentionally scale up from there. You know, it's all about setting up the right tests that are, you know, safe, you know, comfortable enough, yet meaningful enough towards the goal and timeline. So it's a matter of having the right discussion with your team, being able to lock arms around that. There's a lot of misconceptions in the space, a lot of misconceptions in marketing. So I think the right education, the right guidance of what you're doing together, that communication allows for the best partnerships and the best results. I've seen campaigns with little to no performance 3 weeks in, and groups looking to cancel. And then by week six, in other cases, by month three, they were surpassing all the performance benchmarks. They kept scaling and they went to the top spots. So I try to give these stories and examples. You do not want to shut things off too early. You want to manage to a point to where it's working for you, and you can, you know, hit larger and larger goals from there.
I think also the key to that is a bit of your 8-point plan. Right? Like if you've done the work to set the right foundation and get the right strategy in place, give it time, because then we'll be able to see that. So I'm wondering, even in that 8-point plan, how long does it take you before you turn on that campaign so that they can kind of start their clock?
Yeah. 4 weeks, two sections a week is our common structure towards it. I've had to streamline it into 2 weeks, four sections a week. I've had to run a 4-hour workshop and have, you know, many founders put this together at once. I like spending more time on it. I think a month is very reasonable. I've seen major agencies take, you know, 6 months longer to put together a strategy. I've seen agencies that are just indefinitely focused on strategy. But I do believe there needs to be reflection and time to process. The strategy is about the questions you're asking yourself. It's about that journey more than the finished product. The finished product shows the findings, but it's much better to do that ahead of the launch versus during the live campaign, which could cost you time, it could cost you money, it could push you in a direction where you quit the marketing. You want to have an algorithmic roadmap with that strategy where you feel very confident about how you're going to hit the goals and what you're going to do if those results are not appearing. So I would say that month, in many cases, it's another couple weeks to get everything set up and really running. And then if we're working with the capital raise and they're not live yet, we could actually do a pre-launch campaign and do audience building. There's a reservation mode that the SEC defines as test the waters that you could run. There's different options. But it is all a matter of planning. Failing to plan is planning to fail. And I'm not sure if this is going to work. We're just going to see what happens, or we'll throw a few ad dollars at it later, but let's see what comes in first. It should all fit into the larger strategy.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm in agreement with you. I think like 4 to 6 weeks is actually a pretty good sweet spot. You know, everything's fresh. Things aren't going to change so dramatically, because in this day and age, I feel like everything changes so quickly that if you spend too much time in the plan stage, then you almost have to shift. I've worked with agencies that, oh my God, they take forever from a strategic standpoint. I've actually had to say, how many more meetings do you have to have with me? I think that you've met with everybody. You've met with them twice for hours. Like, where are we at here? Like, what else do you need to know? But I think like that 4 to 6 weeks is such a good sweet spot for that. Now, I've asked you several final questions. I promise you, this is the final question. And that is, if you knew then what you know now, what's the marketing advice that you give to yourself?
It would be to structure more referral partnerships and earlier, as well as to have a systemized approach towards watching my competitors and just other groups in similar markets. You need to be at the forefront on how businesses are operating.
Yeah.
Beyond just what products they're offering, and you should absolutely know their products and how they're marketing. And then you should be building relationships that bring in a steady flow of introductions and clientele. I've seen our biggest growth periods when those new relationships become active, and sometimes they could take a few years before they really start becoming active. Others, it's after the first call. But doing that quicker would have led to more accelerated growth. I would highly encourage your audience to use LinkedIn to do this. You could find the exact companies in your vertical or verticals that you want to build partnerships with. You could find the exact, you know, types of businesses, the exact people that you want to speak to there. You could send 25 invitations per day per LinkedIn account. You know, from your account, you could send an invitation with the first message. If you keep doing that, you can get up to about 40 invitations per day per profile, but don't go over that amount. You get your account shut down for a day. You look for a 20% or higher acceptance rate from those invitations, followed by a 20% or higher response rate from messages that you send those people. You can have a scheduling link in there to streamline the booking process. And I'd say within a month, be on a call daily, you know, business day, you know, 20 calls a month from it. And if those are all with partners, they're not all going to work out. Some of them won't even show up. But if you're able to put together a few new referral partnerships each month, and those referral partnerships are bringing you business, you're going to be in a great place. We structure something similarly for investors that we're reaching out to on behalf of the issuers that we work with. But just, you know, a tip, what I know now and what I could have done then, that would be it.
That's huge. I love that you not only left us with such a wise nugget, but also like percentages and like a breakdown of like, this is actually what I would go back and do. I can't thank you enough for coming on here and just kind of, you know, dropping your knowledge bombs and really sharing from your plan to the finance to, you know, your experience. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. It's been a lot of fun. Great conversation. Thanks for having me on.